Golf Smarter number 86 for August 7, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
PGA head professional for Stone Tree Golf Course, Pat Jones.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks to those of you who sent your emails about your favorite course and your playing partners who also listen to the Golf Smarter podcast. Please keep them coming, and I promise to get them all in, not just all at once, so stay tuned. I do want to say hey to Ken Kishihara, who plays at the Brighton Crest Country Club in Fremont, California, near Fresno, and he says, Bill, Don, and Greg, you owe me money. If you ever want to argue why golf isn't the greatest sport in the world, let me share this short note from a listener who wishes to remain anonymous. Hi, Fred. I wanted to tell you about my playing partner that also listens to the show. It's my dad. Me and my father don't talk much, maybe because of him moving our family so many times. Well, after this latest move to Texas, I've been wanting to become a better golfer and have done so through the Golf Smarter podcast. My favorite thing about the podcast isn't necessarily the advice, but that it gives me and my dad something to talk about and hold a conversation on. Golfing has brought us closer together, and so has your podcast. And for that, I'd like to thank you.
Welcome, Pat.
Fred, thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate you giving me some time this afternoon. You love to teach, don't you?
Teaching is definitely a passion for me. It's probably the reason I got into golf.
But you didn't start out wanting to be a golf professional.
No, actually, I spent 15 years in high-tech marketing, went through a dot-com phase and was unemployed for a year and basically decided to change careers. And
live through the bust, huh?
Yeah.
Survive the bust?
It was always, I started playing golf when I was 28, so kind of late in life, but it was always about having a dream. And when I used to meet people, I'd always be like, what's your dream? And I think the dream for every individual is not being the president of a major corporation, but is it, opening your own boutique or a restaurant? Or for me, it was always wanting to be a professional athlete, wanted to be a Major League Baseball player, didn't work out, and now I'm a professional golfer, or a golf professional, we like to say. Yeah. It gets confusing. Some people are like, oh, you're on TV. I'm like, no, that would be Tiger Woods, who actually gets paid to play golf, and I teach people how to play golf. So
big difference.
A little difference between professional golfers and golf professionals.
Well, thank you for that distinction.
Yeah.
We've always been so confused about that. It's interesting that you got so many directions I can go, that you started at playing golf at 28. And realize, I mean, and you said you were an athlete growing mm-hmm. up, but you picked up golf pretty late.
It was, yeah. When I was 9 years old, my father took me to a driving range, and I hit balls once, and I decided to stay with baseball. And when I was about 28, a very good friend of mine, Mark Gentry, who's also a very good athlete, amazing individual, taught me how to play golf. And he's just called me one day. He's like, "You want to go play golf?" I'm like, "Mark, I don't know how to play." He's like, "I'll teach you." And subsequently to this day, we almost play every Monday, and I beat his pants. And sometimes he hates me for it. But
just revenge.
But it's great. It was, golf's addicting. We all know that, and it's very mental. So sometimes when I teach, I talk about people perfecting the game, and golf's obviously something that we can't perfect.
Yeah,
versus
how can
like
you talk about that?
Well, versus somebody who's a bowler. You know, people have addictive personalities, and if somebody took up bowling, once you bowled the 300 game, you could put the ball away. But with golf...
No, you want to see if you can do it a second time.
Yeah, possibly. But
am I that good, or was that just a lucky day?
Yeah, but with golf, there is no perfect game. You know, what is the perfect game? Yeah, somebody could say, well, you make 18 birdies, and that would be the perfect game.
Well
what if I made
eagles?
14 birdies and 4 eagles? Isn't that the perfect game?
Right.
Or is it... four hole in ones, four eagles, and then, you know, 12 birdies. Who knows? But for
well, if we keep being able to drive the ball longer and longer and longer, right, maybe it's just shooting a 20 that day.
Yeah. I shot 18 today. That would be great.
What's the great line about, I think it was Bob Hope or something, says, I always shoot par. It just depends how many holes I play that day.
Exactly.
You know, after 75 shots, I'm going home.
Yeah.
It's one way to look at
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So,
but how many baseball players want to be golfers and how many golfers want to play baseball?
Yeah, I think the thing is with professional sports, all professional athletes want to be golfers.
Or rock and rollers.
Or yeah. rock and rollers, or yeah. both. Or, yeah. or even the rock and rollers are definitely
Alice Cooper's
the big golfer. So, I think a lot of the sports that we play, baseball especially, we see a lot of good golfers come from hockey. Maybe not a lot from basketball because their limbs are a little bit longer and it gets a little bit more difficult. But
Charles Barkley.
Charles has a tough swing. but
MJ,
yeah,
different yeah. story. He loves
yeah, there's. Game. I mean, all those guys are great
But they're
athletes.
Still addicted to it.
Yes, and it's continual. I mean, we're all addicted to it. I
got to play with a professional wrestler.
Did you?
I played with Jesse the Body Ventura.
Oh, my
once.
Goodness. How's that?
It was so... The guy did not shut up the entire round of golf. Whether you were putting, driving, whatever, he had a story to tell.
Sure.
And who's going to tell him to be quiet?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Exactly. So no. It was a lot of fun. But he loved the game.
That's what it's about.
And he was playing a lot. What is it that you like to emphasize when you're teaching?
You know, for me, it's understanding individuals' expectations. You know, everybody, I always say, everybody, when they come off the golf course, if you shot your best round, you broke 80, you shot 78, the first thing that somebody does is they look at the card and they're like, man, I could have shot 76 if I didn't make the birdie or da-da-da. And for me...
You should have.
Yeah.
I should have put that.
I shouldn't have just tried to tap it in. So for me, when I'm teaching, I look at the player's ability. I look at their expectations, their practice. Usually I spend about 15 minutes doing an interview with people before I do a lesson, just understanding their ability, what they do well, what they need to improve on, physical abilities, if they've had any surgical operations, mental capacity. And I just go straight up, you know, how are you mentally? You know, and some people are like, I'm a wreck. Because I have some students that just feel like every shot should be a perfect shot, mm-hmm. you know, and every ball that they strike is, if it's not the best shot, there's frustration, there's anger, and that's just putting expectations so high on oneself that they're just not, it's not realistic. I you know, when I go out and teach, I usually have the ability to go out and tell stories about my experiences as a golf professional and use my rounds as examples towards perfect shots or mental breakdowns and things like that. And the other, yes, this morning I had a lesson and I told a story about my round 2 days ago on Wednesday. And for the first seven holes, I was even par and I was fine. And on the seventh hole or first six holes, I was even. On the seventh hole, it just all broke down, mm-hmm. and it was a par four, and I made 10. Mm-hmm. And it was just something that I talked to people about, negative and positive momentum. And I had the positive momentum. Everything was going, but once I hit the first tee shot on seven, it just spiraled. It broke down, and it broke down, and I tried to make good management course management shots, and I'd make one good and then two bad. And for the life of me, I came out of that hole with a 10. And I haven't made a 10 in how long? I can't remember. But what I thought to myself and I...
And it was a par...
Four.
Okay.
And I emphasized to all my students is, you know what? Golf is everything we hear. One shot at a time. It's live with the results. Stay in the moment. So what I tried to do is obviously get through that hole. Once I got through the hole... made bogey on eight, parred nine, and on the back I shot one under. So I used it. I tell the story because I had a horrific hole. I had a 10. I shot 78, but I was 6 over on one hole. So from a mental standpoint, I had to just, after I left the seventh green, I'm like, I got to leave it behind, and I got to just play one shot at a time and get through the round and just hopefully not carry that negative momentum with me to subsequently the next hole and the next hole and the next hole. And that's what golf's about. It's negative and positive momentum. When you're, you know, if you look at your scorecard, what you don't see is bogey, birdie, eagle, triple, par. It's usually, if you start off bogey, it's going to be bogey, bogey, bogey. You make par, you're going to make another one. Usually make another one until you make a mistake. If it's mental or physical in striking the ball, there's going to be a mistake, and then there's going to be a breakdown. One thing I always tell people, it's rare that I make double, or it's rare that I'm going to make a double from the middle of the fairway. You know, it's the person who off the tee gets in the hazard, and now they have a shot that's 260 yards. They got to go around the tree, over the creek, and land it on impossible. I can't hit that shot. Tiger and Phil can hit that shot. But myself and the 30 handicappers, they're not hitting the shot. So what they try to do is hit the shot. They leave it in the hazard. They put it in the creek, and it's the spiral. It's the negative momentum. They hit one bad shot. They're going to hit another and another and another until they obviously hit a good shot or just get out of that moment. Finish the hole, and ideally, once you get to the next tee, get into a routine that puts you in the present.
Congratulations on having such a blow-up hole and being able to get yourself past it. That is skill. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do, is to come back and have a great round after just beating, you know, just playing like crap for one hole.
Right, right.
What would you say would be the best way to assess when you're having, you know, you have an errant shot, to assess how aggressive to go on the rest of that hole, knowing that you're not going to make par on this hole unless you have a phenomenal putt and you have a couple
right,
of great shots.
Right.
What do you do when you're off to the side there? Let's talk about course management for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the best way to assess how to move forward?
Usually what I'm going to do or even convey to my students is I want to hit the next shot to my favorite yardage within reason. If I'm at a par four and I can hit my next shot out, if I got to chip it out or hit it to 100 yards, I want to be in a position where I'm pulling a club out of my bag and I'm comfortable. What I don't want to do or have a student do is the thought process for them sometimes is hit as far as I can, get closest to the green as possible. Well, what happens if we're doing that, sometimes we're in front of the creek, we're 40 yards from the green, the pin's tucked right behind a bunker, I'm not comfortable with that shot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know too many people that are comfortable with a 40-yard shot over the creek, over the bunker. It's, you know, so what we need to do from
it's really not a problem if you're 125 yards out,
no.
Especially if your confidence club is your 9-iron
right.
or your pitching wedge,
right.
And you love hitting that shot.
Exactly.
That's where you try. That's the strategy, right?
Right. So what I try to do is get to a position where I'm comfortable, put it on the green. If I get it close and I make the putt, great. I make par. Worst is happening is I'm going to make bogey. You know, it's you got to take your medicine, put yourself in a situation where you can hit a good shot and hopefully make par. You know, if you make bogey, that's not bad from hitting something, you know, 200 yards duck hook into the gorse.
Yeah.
You know, it's golf is very mental and it's very much course management. And when I talk to my students, what I'm trying to get them to do a lot is when I talk about staying in the moment is getting those people that are the 12 to 18 handicap that are obviously good enough to where they can get around the course and make some pars, and they're going to throw in the doubles and the triples. And what I teach them is, you know what, your swing's pretty good, but what we need to do is develop a routine that's going to get you thinking the same way every shot. And that's all about getting them into a pre-shot routine, getting behind the ball, seeing the shot, trusting their swing, staying in the moment, and living with the results. Because once the ball leaves the club face, there's nothing you can do.
That's exactly
there's nothing you can do.
Oh, that felt great.
Yeah.
Oh, I ended up in the sand.
Right, right.
Exactly.
And it's, you know, the golfers are, they're always looking for the perfect shot. And I told a story 2 days ago to one of my students, or actually told the story about when I played on Monday. I was playing with myself, my friend Mark, and one of our marshals, and I was watching his body language, and he'd hit a shot, and I could just see he was frustrated, but I'm thinking to myself, man, he's still in play. The shot wasn't perfect, but he hit a good shot. And we get to 15, and he's struggling. He's a good player, but he's struggling. And I said, Dick, here's what you really need to think about, is you're keeping the ball in play. You're not scoring well, but what you need to do is think about what you're doing from a standpoint of you're playing the game, you're not scoring well, but don't get down on yourself. Don't bring yourself down because you're not making putts and you're not hitting the perfect shots. You know, I explained to him, we were on approaching the 16th tee. I explained to him, I think I was two over. And I said, after I hit the tee shot, I explained to him, Dick, I just hit my tee shot on 16. I'm two over, and I've only hit three perfect shots. And my three perfect shots were, I hit a great tee shot on 14. I hit a great putt on 14. And he's like, what putt was that? I'm like, the putt that I missed. He's like, what? I'm like, I was 3 feet away. I missed the putt, but it was perfect shot. It was the right speed and the right line. It just didn't go in the hole. But when I struck that putt, I was like, this is perfect. It didn't go in. You know, I misread the putt. It wasn't the line, but I hit the right speed. I hit on my line, came off the putter.
It was that perfect. Simple. You just misread the line.
Yeah. And then on 16, subsequently, I hit another perfect drive. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the
so
round,
you didn't carry it with you. I mean, because that could be a very frustrating time, and it's a very easy thing to carry with you.
Yeah, but it's at the end of the round, I think I shot like 78 or something, and I'm like, Dick, I only had three perfect shots, and you're looking for every shot to be perfect. It's just not going to happen. You get on TV, you watch the best players in the world, Tiger, Phil, Goosen, Els, Appleby, all those guys, man, they're missing fairways. They're missing putts. Sure. They're missing chips. You got to understand that you're only going to hit a couple perfect shots during the course of a round. That's the name of the game. You're not out there earning a paycheck.
You know, it's interesting because a teacher once asked me, how many best shots per round do you have?
Yeah.
And I thought about this for quite a while. And it's like, didn't know how to answer him. And he looked at me and goes, you only get one best shot around.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Because even if you have a good shot here and you hit a better one, well, that's your best shot for the day.
Yeah.
And you hit a better one, that's your best shot.
Exactly.
You only get one best shot per round.
Right.
But keeping yourself, it's, I don't want to say it's a cliche to stay in the moment, but it's so hard to do.
It is.
Especially if you're playing a course that you're familiar with and you come up to it going, this hole eats me alive, or I'm not, you know, I don't swing this club well. Well, it's your swing. It's not the club's fault, right?
Sure.
And I mean,
sure.
So how, give me some help. Tell me, how do you stay in the moment? What's the advice that you provide your students, and give me a tip on how to do that.
I go back to the pre-shot routine, and I explain to them that my pre-shot routine is about 11 seconds. And my goal there, and it's the same every time. Just like you and I driving a car. I might get in the car, shut the door, start the engine. You might get in the car, start the engine, close the door. We do it differently, but you have the same routine every time. It's subconscious. What you need to do is develop a routine. For me, it's standing behind the ball, take my one practice swing, find my target, get up to the ball, look down the fairway, my target again, come back, and take the shot. And that's how we need, that's the pre-shot routine is getting you focused and preparing you to hit that next shot. And hopefully it's pulling you out of what just happened, good or bad, you know, because golf is about adrenaline and your heart rate, controlling your emotions, good or bad. And I could come off a hole and just made birdie, man, my heart's pumping. I'm excited and I'm thinking about, boy, I could go low today. Or
yeah, right. Well, the curse of the birdie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's I just made double and my heart's pumping, you know, 130 beats per second. You know, how do I control that? I need to, you know, get back into my routine, get in the moment, and hopefully prepare myself to hit that shot. A good friend of mine that I went to my PGA school with, Brian Kennedy, who works at Congressional now, told me a story. He used to be an assistant where Tiger's a member in Florida at Isleworth, I think it is. And he said he would see Tiger at the end of the range hit golf balls. And then Tiger would do wind sprints, 200-yard wind sprint, out to the flag and back. Why? To increase his heart rate, to prepare himself to hit the shot.
Wow.
On the 72nd hole, out of a bunker at the Canadian Open or whatever it was, when he hit the 6-iron, you know, that's how you prepare. Because
so then maybe it's a good idea to lose a club occasionally, so you have to run back to this previous hole so that you can come back to, okay, I'm ready to go.
Right. Hang on a second. Right. But that's the thing. Most people, when they're playing golf, if it's a good moment or a not-so-good moment, a negative time, and your heart rate starts increasing, you don't practice. You don't go to the practice center and hit balls when your heart's beating 130 beats per second.
You're right.
You don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
So that's, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in situations where my heart starts beating. I'm like, man, I'm going to make eagle here, and I don't hit a good shot.
No way.
Because I'm not comfortable in that environment. So my goal is when we get a practice facility out here at Stone Tree where we can hit balls, first thing I'm going to purchase is a stationary bicycle. And I'm going to have my students warm up, and then I'm going to have them get on the bike and get their heart rate up and get them to hit balls when their heart's beating 130 beats per minute. And then they can understand what it's like to hit a golf ball when they're very excited because they're playing well, and it could be the 18th hole, and they could be playing a match, the club championship. I got to make par here, and your heart starts racing. Or you just made double, and you want to break every club in your bag, like 10 cup, you know. What's it feel like, you know?
I was on a golf trip with some friends, and I was having a good little stretch. And a friend of mine said, are you playing well right now? I said, why? Because I didn't want to talk about
it.
And he goes, because you're silent. You haven't said a word in a long time.
Right.
And I have a feeling that if you're doing that, that means you don't want to talk about what's
right.
going on.
It's right.
Like, yeah. I'm having a real good stretch.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you when I'm done.
I believe that. I'm the first one to admit that when I play golf, I do not keep score. I will
really?
Not keep score. Somebody else has to keep score.
So what do you do? At the end of the round, you add up your scores?
Yeah.
And of course, you can remember every shot.
I can remember, and I can have a pretty good idea where I am. But what I don't want to do is have a scorecard in front of me, and I'm staring at it, you know, for 4 hours, mm-hmm. and I'm seeing pars and birdies and more birdies and eagles or whatever it is it could be positive or negative, and have it in my mind. Because when we're playing well, we're going to start thinking about the score. Well, I could shoot this or I could shoot that.
Right.
And that's when you shoot that other score that you didn't want to shoot. Or when you're looking at the card and you're like, man, I'm 7 over through 4 holes. I want to go home.
Right.
That's what some people think, and you just get frustrated.
So yeah, that's the challenge of, okay, it's time to calm down because I can improve this.
I prefer not to keep score.
That's really interesting.
I give it to somebody else, and I know in my head how I'm playing, but one thing that I've done before in the past is playing well and then protecting my lead. When I played, we have a skins game every Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I was playing well one day. I started protecting my lead because I'm like, I'm going to win low gross today because I'm 2 under through 9. And low gross usually is around par. I'm like, I always play better on the back at Stone Tree than the front, which is hard to believe.
Really hard to believe.
So I get to 10. I'm like, I'm 2 under, and I'm going to light up the back. But maybe I want to be a little protective. I start hitting shots that I'm not used to hitting. I'm a very aggressive player, and I start being a little bit more conservative, and boom, first thing happens, bogey, bogey, bogey. And I'm like, what am I doing? I got to go.
Changed your game?
Yeah, I changed my game because I started thinking about my score.
Hmm.
And I said, you know what? I got to go back to the way I play and the way I heard Tiger, what he did in the Masters when he won by 8 strokes or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He said he wasn't there to protect his lead, but it was to increase the lead. You know, so it's you know, at one point you want to protect, but then the other side, it's like, why protect? Just go with your momentum. You're playing well. Continue playing the way you play. That's what got you there. That's what got me to 2 under. Why should I change my playing philosophy halfway through my round? And it just, it showed bogey, bogey, bogey. And then I went back and got back on my horse and I finished well, but it's, you know.
So did you get low gross that day?
No, I didn't. I know.
Okay. How, I two questions. And I hate asking two questions.
That's
so
all right.
Which direction do I go? How are you as a teacher able to lower your students' expectations, successfully lower their expectations on what they want to do? I mean, I'm coming to you to improve, and you're telling me to lower my expectations. How are you able to communicate that?
It's difficult. It's
That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, it's difficult. What we try to do is how do I lower their expectations? I think it's talking to them about their scores and how they're playing and just through their handicap. I mean, I can sit there and talk to somebody and be like, well, your handicap hasn't changed. You're still a 14 over the last 6 months, and we've been, you know, talking about your swing and your approach to the game, but you're not improving. But you still have these high expectations. Usually what happens is people don't want to practice their short game. They don't want to practice their chipping at all. All they want to do is go hit their driver. And I'm like, you need to have an understanding. When you go to a golf course, you're only going to hit your driver 14 times max, right? And if you're shooting...
And if you're playing strategically, you probably aren't even going to hit
even less, you know? And if you're shooting 100, you're hitting your driver 14% out of your round. So you're going to tell me when you go to a practice center, you're only going to hit 14 balls out of 100 with your driver. Usually it's the other way around. They hit 86 balls with their driver, and the other 14 are with their pitching wedge or something, and then they leave. They don't practice their short game. And I try to instill with everybody that 65% of their shots are going to be within 100 yards. And I had a student this morning, my lesson, Nancy Cherney. We're on the 11th tee. She tees off. Her second shot. She's at, after her second shot, she's 81 yards away. She pulls out her 5 iron. She puts it pin high, right of the green. She hits a chip shot, blades it over the green, 2 putts. She makes 6. And I'm like, Nancy, let's evaluate what just happened. You hit 2 shots that went 200 yards, and your last 4 shots were inside 81 yards. Your short game. It's all about your short game, you know? I can understand their expectations. Everybody has high expectations. My expectations are off the chart. I will never meet my expectations because I have such great hopes that I can be such a good golfer, but I don't practice. I don't have time to practice. So what I try to do is just get people to understand your expectations can be high, but to make the commitment, you need to practice. And I need you here 2-3 times a week. I need to see you practicing your short game, you know, because as soon as your short game's good and you're hitting great shots, your driver's going to go away and you're going to start flaring your driver or you're going to start yipping your putter. You can't just commit to your driver and your putting. And that's what a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend of mine who's a really good player. He's like a 4 handicap, but he's got the short game of a 20. He locks up. He gets around the green and he locks and he's a mental case. He's frozen. You know, he's not within the moment. He's not feeding off any positive experience that he had 3 holes ago. If he had a good chip shot 3 holes ago, then feed off that. But don't pull a club out of your bag. If you just blade that sand wedge over the green, don't pull it out again. Because what you're going to think, God, I didn't hit a very good shot last hole. This isn't going to be good. And he freezes and he stabs at it or he flips it. And it's bad.
We have a segment on the show where Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf answers questions from listeners. And well, somebody wrote in, and I can't quote it exactly, but he talked about wanting to get he wasn't sure if he wanted a hybrid or a new three wood. You know, he says, because I hit my three wood 220 yards, and I hit my hybrid, you know, and my five, you know, this guy was a long hitter.
Sure.
And he wanted to lower his scores, which would be the best, you know, new wood for him to purchase. And Kenny said, if your scores are still high and you're hitting the ball that far, work on your short game.
Yeah.
He says, because that's where your scoring is probably high.
Yeah. Usually
described
that
perfectly.
Yeah. Usually it's, Once you get around 10 single digit handicap, the only way you're going to get from 9 to 3 is short game. Because if you're a 9, you're getting around the course pretty well, but you need to be able to, when you're missing greens, going in bunkers, you got to get up and down.
Right.
You know, especially the guy that's, you know, the 6, and he's, you know, really starting to move. And he wants to be a 2. I'm like, man, you got to be a magician around the greens.
Yeah.
And I think being around the greens are the most difficult shots in the world, because that's when in your head you're trying to hit the perfect shot, because it's not a full swing. Mm-hmm. It's not pulling my 8-iron out and doing a full swing and it's going 162 yards. I'm pulling my, you know, do I take my sand wedge? Do I take my 60 degree? Okay, I got downhill lie, thick rough, short pin, you know, I got to flip it, you know, got to get it over the bunker, you know, a lot of things going on, and you put yourself in a position to hit the perfect shot, and you're not going to do it, and you're going to explode.
And what about these guys? And like, here you are, you're 28 years old, all right? Let's go back to when you first started playing golf. You were an athlete, you know, you played baseball, your hand-eye coordination had to be decent.
Sure.
You come out, you start playing golf, you start shooting, you know, 110, 115, then you start keeping score properly, you realize you're hitting 130, 140. But then you start breaking 100, and you're like, okay, by the end of summer, and now you're getting into the playing months, you're in May, June, and you're going, by the end of summer, I'm going to be breaking 90, I'm going to be breaking, shooting in the low 80s on a regular basis. Is that realistic?
No. No, it took me, I would say, I started at 28. By the time I was 35, because I was 35.
Oh,
when
you said you started 28, that's your age, not your
my age. Yeah.
I thought you meant your handicap.
Yeah. No.
Sorry.
Yeah, my handicap was 28. No. At the age of 28, when I started playing golf, to the time I was 35 years old, 35 is when I got into the golf industry. So 7 years. It took me 7 years. I remember right when I started working at the Presidio, 7 years to get to a 14. Mm. Is that good or bad? Who knows? I mean, I've met people that in 2 years, you know, with a lot of work, have gotten to a 14. It took me 7 years, and once I started working at a golf course and had resources like teaching pros to help me, and unlimited ball access, I got to the point where I was hitting 400 balls a day because I got in my head that I wanted to be a good player, I wanted to be competitive, and the only way I was going to do it was hit balls. So literally for, I would say, a good 6 months, I hit 400 balls a day, which takes 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a lot of work. And
swollen hands too.
Yeah. And I had some great instructors who helped me along the way. And I still go to one of them. And I didn't see a big change. Even hitting a lot of balls, I wasn't doing a lot of short game. And what I saw was probably in 2 years working at a golf course, I went from 14 to about 6 or 8. Still wasn't that great. Still wasn't doing a lot of short game. And I found that if I wanted to really make the commitment to play golf well, or at least to something that I would enjoy a little bit more, because every time we go out, our expectations are a little bit more than what they should be, it was I need to practice my short game.
Yep.
And it was doing a little bit of that, and it's a process. I mean,
that's the takeaway.
The expectation,
your
it's like
game is so critical to your scoring.
It's so critical. And one thing I just tell people, it's like, you need to have an understanding of what you put into the game is what you're going to get out. I think golf is the hardest sport next to hitting a 90-mile-an-hour fastball than anything else. I've played a lot of sports, but the thing about golf is when you're playing, you have all the time in the world to think. You're not reacting. Or basketball, football, soccer, hockey, you just react. There's no time to think.
Right.
You know, you run down the court, somebody throws you a ball, I'm shooting or I'm passing. In golf, you can stand there as long as you want and have 50 little bubbles above your head, you know. Transfer your weight, keep your eyes on the ball, swing slow, don't slice, release the club. My wife's mad at me. My boss knows I'm playing golf and I shouldn't be playing golf today. All those things in your head. It's a jungle up there. Yeah. And it used to happen to me. And I finally told my wife, I said, when I play golf, don't call me. Because she would call me and she felt like her emergencies were my emergencies. Her email's down and she wants to call me and tell me. And so then the rest of the day, I got to be concerned about how she's going to feel later tonight because she's upset. And I said, unless the house burning down or you're sick, don't call, please. Love you. Text me, but don't call me. Because it's golf is a place where it's our time to get out and get away from everything.
Okay, I'm going to stop you here, man, because you've empowered us in so many ways, but this isn't the kind of message that I want guys to go, babe, that's it. I'm playing golf today. Don't talk. You're on your own on that one. We're not going to help you on that. I can't believe how quickly this time has gone by, but before we go, I really want to ask you, you've got a really interesting side business that you do,
mm-hmm.
and for people who live in the San Francisco area, in the Bay Area here, this could be taken advantage of. Tell us quickly about that.
I have a business called GolfRentals.net, partnered with Brad Gosha. Basically, what we do is we rent sets of golf clubs to country clubs, public golf courses for corporate events. So anybody who needs clubs for corporate events or one-time use or tournaments, you can just go to GolfRentals.net.
Golf
it's a great little service that we provide.
Well, check it out no matter where you live, because I'm sure we'll be able to find ways to Pat can resource other places around the country and help you out find clubs if the demand is there.
Definitely.
Okay, excellent. Pat, it's been great.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed talking to you.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hey, Kenny, how are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Got a very funny letter from Falk in Stuttgart, Germany. And I'm not going to read the letter today because that's not what we're doing, but I just love the opening I wanted to share with you. It says, "Dear Fred, dear Kenny, my online friends. True, it's a kind of one-way relationship, but still, my girlfriend is jealous from time to time because there were weeks I spent more time with you guys than with her."
Oh, that's great.
I read that to my wife, and she went, "Yeah, what's so funny about that?" She feels the same way when it comes to golf. She feels like, "You're not with me, you're with golf again." It's like, well, yeah, this is fun. I love you, dear, but this is fun.
It's good to get those kind of letters.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. Hey, well, let's talk about something that we're going to be giving away, but it's in a bigger picture. What do you want to talk about?
We talk a lot about training and practice on the golf course, things like that. And one of the more popular training aids that we sell is the Speed Stick. VJ uses it and endorses it pretty heavily, so not that everything that he endorses I go after, but this particular item is really good because one of the things that it does is it increases flexibility, which is vitally important in the golf swing, and it also has a speed gauge on it, which tells you what your swing speed is. So through this training with this particular club, or stick, I should say, because it doesn't have a club head on it, you will see a huge difference if you use it regularly like you're supposed to in your flexibility, and you get instant feedback on what your swing speed is. I mean, I tried to play with one for a little while and see if I could increase my club head speed, and just over a matter of a couple of days, I increased it by 5 miles per hour. So what that does, in essence, is obviously you're going to be hitting the ball farther. Most cases, you're going to be hitting the ball higher and able to stop it easier as well. So a great great addition for a price that's relatively inexpensive at $100.
Can I play devil's advocate for just a minute?
You can.
Is really the goal to swing faster and faster and faster? I mean, aren't you going to start
no,
swinging out of your shoes?
Through flexibility, you can swing smoother and easier and still generate more club head speed.
Okay, so the goal really is to smoother and easier, but increase your club head speed. Now, how?
Yeah, I mean,
if you look
at the guys on tour and you watch them on TV, their swing looks effortless. Correct.
Correct.
Okay. And then if, you know, a lot of times, especially in majors, you might see it this weekend at the PGA, but they'll have a box that'll show you club head speed, launch angle, spin rate, and distance. And through that effortless swing, you tend to see their swing speeds are typically around 110 to 120, maybe 125 miles an hour. And the swing is very effortless. Okay, you got a guy out here that's going to swing as hard as he absolutely can, and his swing speed is going to be 90 miles an hour. And the reason that is because he's tensing up a whole lot whenever he's trying to swing. Mm-hmm. You know, that old grip it and rip it style where all your muscles are contorted and flexed and you don't have a lot of flexibility in your swing and you're not hitting the ball as far. With one of these devices, you're able to free up some of the muscles that you need to be able to twist and coil. And in essence, you're able to come through the impact zone with a lot higher club head speed with basically a more fluid swing.
Okay. Well, this makes sense because I remember seeing one of those graphics on television that is saying that Tiger's got like 138 mile an hour club head speed, which is the fastest one on the tour. And again, it looks effortless. And I do see people on the course, and I'm probably guilty of it myself, that I do tense up. You know, at times when I'm really concentrating on a shot, over-concentrating on a shot. But how can this stick increase your flexibility? I mean, we talk a lot here about stretching and yoga and working out and core strength. How can a stick increase your flexibility?
Just with the length of it, you're able to increase flexibility. Just with it's more repetition than anything else that's going to increase flexibility. Okay. We talk a lot about that, and somebody that goes to the gym and works out, which I do myself, you're building muscles, but you're also restricting flexibility. So I think that flexibility is a very important impact in the golf swing. You know, somebody that has a little bit longer swing or more flexibility, they're able to coil more, they're obviously going to be able to hit the ball further. And that's a huge detriment to somebody that's not able to increase flexibility. You're not able to increase club head speed. So with this device, there's other devices out there that do this as well, with the heavy hitter and the momentous driver, which these are weighted clubs. They definitely help increase flexibility. With this device, though, with the speed gauge, you're able to instantly tell what the swing speed is. So you get instant results. And you can see swing falls, or you can see different techniques that if you swing the club a little bit differently than you have before, that you're getting more club head speed with a certain swing path. So it does help in a way with a lot of different aspects of the game: flexibility, swing path, and swing speed.
Wow. And is it weighted?
It's not a weighted stick per se. It is a little bit heavier than a traditional golf club, but at the same time, it's relatively close because they want to give you an accurate gauge on swing speed. You know, with a weighted club, you're obviously not going to generate as much club head speed as you are with, say, a D2 to D5 swing-weighted golf club or driver. So, you know, they want to give you some comparison there to tell you an accurate swing speed. It's a neat device. It really is. And you'll be able to see if you use one of these, if you just really try to swing really hard and then you take a more fluid approach and come through the impact zone more relaxed and are able to release the stick more, you're able to see a big difference in club head speed.
Wow. Wow. And what's the length of this? Is this like the length of a driver or a short iron or wedge?
It's the length of a driver.
Okay.
So, I mean, that gives you an accurate gauge as to what you're swinging your driver.
Hmm. Well, that's fascinating. Do you want to give one of those away?
Yeah, I definitely do. I want somebody to get one and give us some feedback. You know, let us know how they feel about the golf club or the stick. It's going to make a definite impact on your game. I will tell you that. I mean, there's no way, if you do use it and practice with it, you're going to see results that are going to be, you're going to hit the ball higher, you're going to hit the ball further. You know, without a doubt, you're going to see improvements.
Awesome. All right. Well, the deadline for entry on that will be August 20th, and we'll announce the winner on August 21st. And to enter, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. And once you're there, fill out the shipping information and the verification code. Click submit, and your entry will be posted in there. And again, I'm going to please, you don't need to enter a couple hundred times. You really don't, because I've gone through, and it's just like you get one entry in there. So make it easy on both of us, please. Don't make me spend all this time doing this. So enter once, and we'll have the drawing again on August 21st. And, of course, this disclaimer that once you enter, your email address is provided to Edwin Watts Golf. But that means you get a catalog. So what's the big deal there, right? Great. You know, it's interesting. I want to talk for a moment, Kenny, with you about warming up and practicing on the driving range, since we're talking about something that's going to increase your club head speed. What is the best way to get warmed up for your round? And I'm not talking about going out and practicing. I'm talking about warming up for your round.
Well, I mean, what I find and what you see if you ever go to a tour event and watch the guys on the driving range or you talk to a club pro, we constantly talk about your scoring is typically from 100 yards in. So why go to the driving range and just start busting drivers and then you end with four or five short irons? The way that you're taught and the way most people tell you the best way to practice is to always start with your short irons first, whether it's lob wedge, sand wedge, 8-iron, stuff like that. That's what I do when I go to the range. I want to hit a plethora of those golf clubs. And then I typically end with, you know, 3 wood and a few drivers. If I'm hitting my driver real erratic, I might work on that just a little bit more. But where your scoring is going to be from 100 yards in. If you're hitting fairways, you want to concentrate on those short irons. And I always, always end after I hit my driver a few times. I save a couple of balls for just a lob wedge and try to hit that anywhere from 40 to 80 yard shot a few times. Because a lot of times you find yourself in that spot on the golf course, and that's the shot where, you know, you talk about, man, I'm having to lay up because I was in the rough. I've got 40 or 60 yards left, and I didn't practice this shot, you know. So it's really hard to take off, you know, 50% of the swing on a golf club, because typically what you find when you take off, you say, okay, I'm not going to swing as hard at this shot, and all of a sudden you hit it as far as you normally do. That's where the speed stick would come in, is what we're talking about, because it's a more fluid swing. So when I go to the range, I always start with my short irons. I hit a bunch of those before I ever start approaching my long irons and then my 3 wood and my driver. So, you know, when you're out there practicing, that's what it is. It's practice. You're wanting to concentrate on certain aspects of the game. If you're struggling in one part real bad, definitely hit some of those. But if you're just out there warming up before a round of golf, what I typically do is I always start with the short irons and work my way up.
Excellent. You know what I've been practicing a lot with lately is my hybrid chipper. Because there are so many different shots that offers you that I still haven't figured out, you know, where and when to is the best time to use them. I've used it a lot in a lot of different situations, but I still don't have a complete handle on exactly how to play it that way. But I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, that club has a multitude of capabilities. Oh, if you can figure out all of them. From 100 yards in, you can use it anywhere. So
yeah, well, and
I've gotten some great, I did some reviews on that, and I've gotten some great feedback from customers that have bought it. They absolutely love the thing.
Well, you know, I had a shot that I was about 135 yards out, but the green fell off the back. So if the ball hits the center of the green, it's just going to fly off the back. So I tried to get a soft landing on it. So I used that club, took a full swing on it. And it fell off the back. Because I hit it too far. I was like, oh, hey, this will be fine. And I hit it 145 yards. Like, well, that was a waste of my swing.
So, yeah, but it's still a great, versatile golf club.
It really is a very
just
versatile
about anywhere
club. Yeah.
On the golf course.
Absolutely. So let's give something away that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, the Ben Hogan AHS Hybrid Iron Set. A great, great value. and a great prize to be giving away, right?
It is. Somebody's going to get a tremendous set of golf clubs. And I'll be honest with you, we get the question a lot, you know, do I need to go with a hybrid set or a mixed hybrid or you know, I'm having trouble with my long irons. This is a great opportunity for somebody to get a great set of golf clubs.
We received at least a half dozen questions in the last week asking that very thing about mixing up a hybrid set. That's really on the front of everybody's mind these days about buying new clubs is how many hybrids to put in their bag. So we received 290 entries in the last 2 weeks for the Ben Hogan AHS hybrid set. And you, my friend, get to pick out a number between 1 and 290. You can include 1. You can include 290. I've alphabetized these and sorted them out by first name. And you will select winner number.
Oh, man. That's a lot of entries.
Yeah, I know. Do you need some help?
I got to go high.
Do you need to go to the accounting department to see what...
Yeah. I want to go high just because we haven't had 290 before on an entry. So,
okay.
225.
225 takes me to page number... Wait a minute. I'm trying to find... Okay, it's page 10 to 7. Here we go. Page number 7, 225 is from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. It's Richard Fleischer. Congratulations, Richard. You just got a new set of Ben Hogan AHS all hybrid set irons.
Congratulations.
What Very cool.
Bruce.
Huh?
The pro golfer.
Well, he wouldn't be entering for free stuff if it really was a relationship to Bruce Fleischer. And is Bruce Fleischer from Manitoba, Canada?
I have no idea.
Well, Richard Fleischer is, and this week he's more important because he won.
Yeah, congratulations.
That's great. All right, Kenny, before we go, we just want to remind everyone about Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. We did a two-part episode on hybrids, since that's what we're talking a lot about. And we're going to publish episode number 2 of that, or episode number 5 of the series. It's coming up this week.
Yeah, the second part with John K. Solheim, which was truly incredible.
He was amazing, and it's a great education, not only about the company and the history of the company, but about an insider look. He's a vice president of engineering for Ping, and really you get a good sense of the value of the hybrid club from this guy.
Yeah, he did an amazing job. So it's a very good podcast. Definitely you want to give that a listen.
Please check it out at golfbetterpodcast.com and check out the other podcasts we have at thesmarterpodcasts.com. We'll play a promo for one of them for you right after today's show. All right, Kenny, that's it for today. Thanks so much.
All right, Fred. Take care, bud.
Thank you. And also want to thank Pat Jones, head golf professional at Stone Tree Golf Course in Novato, California. And I want to remind you of the exclusive offer to Golf Smarter listeners from Bobby Kelly in the episode dated July 31st, 2007, just last episode. Building Your A Game is a 3-DVD set that covers core, flexibility, balance, and strength. All necessary elements to increase your distance and lower your scores. Now, regularly, this DVD set sells for $97, but between now and September 4th, 2007, Golf Smarter listeners can get the complete set for only $69. This is not a paid advertisement. I want to get that clear. Bobby Kelly has made this incredibly generous offer, and I accepted it because I think this can help you. So check it out. Go to buildingyouragame.com and you'll read all the details for Golf Smarter listeners. And I'd also like your input. If you think that an ongoing golf fitness podcast would be a valuable complement to Golf Smarter and Golf Better, please send me an email and let me know. This week's quote is submitted by Russ Swanson of Grand Rapids, Michigan, who'll receive golf's newest product, Windage. Branded with the Golf Smarter logo, Windage will quickly and easily entertain your playing partners and reveal wind patterns. Check them out at playthewind.com. Russ writes in to say that after getting his very first hole-in-one this year, he saw a quote on a bulletin board at a local executive course and he had to share. And the quote goes like this. Man blames fate for other accidents, but feels personally responsible for a hole-in-one. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, I'd love to receive your email. Please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com.
Hi, this is David Dragan, driver of your number 6 AAA Ford Fusion. Please join me for the number 6 AAA podcast. I'll do my best to give you an inside look at the life of a professional stock car driver and my thoughts and feelings about what it's like to be on the NASCAR circuit. Number 6 AAA podcast can be found at iTunes or smarterpodcasts.com.